This was Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today we remember composer Jimmy McHugh, who wrote, "I can't give you anything but love. I'm in the mood for love. Don't blame me. Let's get lost." And this song, here's Billie Holiday.
Grab your coat and get your hat. Leave your worry on the doorstep. Just direct your feet to the sunny side of the street. Can't you hear a pitter-pat? And that happy tune is your step. Life can be so sweet on the sunny side of the street.
Jimmy McHugh's songs are having something of a revival. Terrence Blanchard's new CD is a tribute to McHugh. His songs are also featured on albums that recently reached the Billboard Jazz Top 10 by Diana Krall, Karen Allison, Louis Armstrong, and Steve Terrell. Public TV will broadcast a Boston Pops tribute to McHugh, featuring Blanchard and singer Jane Monheit, later this month. My guest is Jim McHugh III, the grandson of Jimmy McHugh. In addition to being one of the managers of his grandfather's estate, Jim McHugh is a photographer for People magazine and is the official photographer for the Grammy Awards. Before we meet him, let's hear his grandfather Jimmy McHugh at the piano with lyricist Dorothy Fields, recorded in the early 1930s. This was recorded to promote their songs from their review Blackbirds of 1928, for which they wrote, "I Must Have That Man," "Doin' the New Lowdown," "Digga Digga Doo," and "I Can't Give You Anything But Love."
Gee, these records really do sound swell, baby. Let's all say a prayer so they will sell, baby. Until that lucky day, you know darn well, baby, we can't give you anything but love.
Here's the grandson of Jimmy McHugh, Jim McHugh III. How well did you know your grandfather?
I knew my grandfather. I knew my grandfather really well. He was a real father figure for me, and I grew up with him, and I spent many years of my life with him. And he died when I was about 20 years old, just as I was leaving college. So I spent a huge part of my life with him, and he was a very, very important figure in my life.
When you say, did you live with him, or?
No, but my mother and father were divorced, and my grandfather played a very strong part in my life. And we would go out every Sunday. We would go to church, the Good Shepherd Church in Beverly Hills, and then we would go with Luella Parsons to lunch at the Beverly Hills Hotel, and she would write her column from the table.
So you knew all the gossip as it was being made.
I knew all the gossip, but at that time, you know, it didn't. It doesn't mean anything to you. All the kids at that time called Luella Parsons Lollipop. That was her name, and she was really wonderful with kids. And I hear terrible things about her and what a terrible gossip columnist she was. But you know, if you were a child, she was absolutely wonderful. So I only have very, very fond memories of her. Yeah.
Now, your grandfather, Jimmy McHugh, started as a song plugger, first working for Irving Berlin and then for the music publishing company Mills Music.
Yes, yes.
A song plugger was someone who sold sheet music by demonstrating the song, and this was in the era when sheet music sales was the way of disseminating music, at least the way of selling music. It was before the popularity of records. What was your grandfather's approach to plugging a song?
Well, my grandfather was a song plugger. And he was a song plugger when he died, and he was a song plugger when he was a little boy in Boston. So when he started, they had these little pianos that were attached to a bicycle, and they would ride around and play these songs on this piano on the bicycle.
This would be what, in the early 1920s?
Oh, earlier than that, really. Yeah, I guess so, 1919, 1920. I mean, he started very, very young. He was the rehearsal pianist at the Boston Opera, and then quickly realized that the commercial world was where he needed to be, and he left Boston and went to New York and worked for the Irving Mills Company and plugged songs.
So let's get back to how he did it. So he rode around on a bicycle that had a little piano attached to it?
Yes. He rode around on a little bicycle with a piano attached to it. And then the other thing they would do, they would go into the music stores, and there would be a player piano there, and they would play the piano in the window. And the thing that they sold was called the mechanical. That was the, if it was on the sunny side of the street, that mechanical piece that played that song was called the mechanical. So years later, when people are getting revenue from songs, there's a type of income stream called the mechanical. And now it's about how songs are played on the radio. But at that time, it was this mechanical piece that went into the player piano. And that was really the sort of the basis of his life, being a song plugger.
And when he plugged songs by playing this piano while he drove around on the bicycle, who would he do that to? Where would he stop and play?
Well, in those days, there were a lot of people on the streets, and they would go up and down Broadway, or they would go up and down any populated street, and they would stop on street corners, and they would play these songs. And interestingly, growing up at that time, there were many other songwriters that would come around to the house, whatever, and they were all from that era, and they all had that mentality. So if there would be a piano in a room, these guys would fight each other to get to that piano stool because they were all song pluggers. So it was funny. You couldn't keep these guys away from a piano.
Let's hear a very famous song that your grandfather Jimmy McHugh wrote with the lyricist Dorothy Fields for the review Blackbirds of 1928. And this was some review. It featured Duke Ellington, Ethel Waters, the Mills Brothers, Don Redman.
Bojangles.
Yeah, Bill Bojangles Robinson.
Yeah.
So we're going to hear I Can't Give You Anything But Love as performed by Ethel Waters and Duke Ellington from this review Blackbirds of 1928. Tell us the story behind the song.
Well, it's a wonderful story. You know, my grandfather, who was the musical director at the Cotton Club, was very instrumental in having Duke Ellington perform there. And so they had gotten the producers of the club to agree to have Duke Ellington perform, and now he and Dorothy Fields had to write a song for Duke Ellington. So as they were wont to do, they would walk the streets of New York, and they would think of ideas. And they were walking down Fifth Avenue, and they stopped in front of the Tiffany's jewelry store. And there in front of the store was a young man and a young woman, and it was right in the middle of the Depression. And they were looking at an extremely expensive diamond bracelet that was in the window. And the young man put his arm around the young girl, and he said, "Baby, I can't give you anything but love." And my grandfather and Dorothy Fields heard this, and they ran back to their studio, and they wrote, "I Can't Give You Anything But Love, Baby." And, of course, it became a huge hit, and it was the first song that Duke Ellington ever played at the Cotton Club.
Well, here's Duke Ellington and Ethel Waters, and this recording is from 1932.
I can't give you anything but love, baby. And that's the only thing I've plenty of. Baby, dream a while, scheme a while, and we're sure to find happiness. And I guess all those things we've always pined for. Gee, I'd like to see you looking swell. Baby, diamond bracelets Woolworth doesn't sell. Baby, till that lucky day, you know darn well. Baby, I can't give you anything but love.
That's Duke Ellington and Ethel Waters, recorded in 1932, one of the songs from Blackbirds of 1928, written by Jimmy McHugh and Dorothy Fields, and my guest is Jimmy McHugh's grandson, Jimmy McHugh III. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Jim McHugh III, the grandson of songwriter Jimmy McHugh. I'm going to ask you about another song that was written by your grandfather, Jimmy McHugh, and the lyricist, Dorothy Fields. The song is I'm in the Mood for Love. There's a great story behind the song. I'd like you to tell it.
Well, this is a wonderful story. It was right in the Depression, and my grandfather had lost a lot of money. He had made some very unwise investments. And he was in New York and walking down the street one day, and he bumped into George Gershwin. And George Gershwin said, hi, Jimmy, how are you? And my grandfather told him, I'm not so good. And George Gershwin said, well, how can I help you out? And so my grandfather said, well, I could really use a piano. So George Gershwin said, well, I'm going to get you a piano, Jimmy. So a couple of days later, there's a knock at his door, and he opens the door, and there are some delivery men with this beautiful piano. And with a little note that said, good luck, Jimmy, George Gershwin. And so my grandfather sat down and started playing the piano, and the first song that he wrote on it was I'm in the Mood for Love. And it became immediately a huge hit, and he was back on top again. And we still have that piano. It's in the Jimmy McHugh office in Beverly Hills. And we still have the note that says, good luck, Jimmy, George Gershwin.
Well, I want to play a great version of that song by Louis Armstrong, who was a good friend of your grandfather. So here's Armstrong doing I'm in the Mood for Love. That's Louis Armstrong's recording of I'm in the Mood for Love, music by Jimmy McHugh, lyric by Dorothy Fields. My guest is Jimmy McHugh's grandson, Jimmy McHugh III. I'm wondering if your grandfather had an opinion of Moody's Mood for Love, which was a new version of the song based on a James Moody solo on I'm in the Mood for Love.
Yeah, it's funny you mention it because I remember this very well. I was young at the time. I was maybe in high school. My grandfather felt this way. It was a terrible thing until he got his royalties on it. Then it was a great thing.
So he did get royalties on it.
Yes, he did.
Oh, I was never
so they,
sure
they
about
wound
that.
Up making the deal. And as soon as they made the deal, first, this is how my grandfather was. Very one-dimensional person. If you sang his song, you were great. If you didn't sing his song, you weren't so great. If he got his royalties, it was terrific. If he didn't get his royalties, it was terrible. So the Moody Mood for Love, oh, he hated it, and how could somebody do this to this song, et cetera, et cetera. Then as soon as they worked out the deal with the estate or with that company, then, oh, now it's great, now it's fine, because it was on the radio all the time.
John Coltrane recorded two of your grandfather's songs on his ballads album, Too Young to Go Steady and Say It Over and Over Again. And I'm wondering if your grandfather knew about the ballads album, what he thought about Coltrane performing his songs.
My grandfather loved John Coltrane. He was a huge fan of John Coltrane and was really thrilled that somebody like that would do his songs and do them in that way. And I particularly, he loved Say It. he thought of that as the consummate jazz song. It was also performed by Frank Sinatra, and he was very, very happy with that rendition that John Coltrane had done.
Well, why don't we hear Coltrane's recording of Say It from the Ballads album. That's John Coltrane from the Ballads album performing the Jimmy McHugh song, Say It. And my guest is Jimmy McHugh's grandson, Jimmy McHugh III. I want to get back to a little earlier in Jimmy McHugh's career when he started writing songs with Dorothy Fields. And this is in the 1920s when there were very few women songwriters. How did he hook up with her? And did he ever talk to you about what it was like for him to work with a woman lyricist at a time when there were so few women writing songs professionally?
This was one of the great relationships of his life, my grandfather. He was a very poor boy who came from Boston, very courageous. And Dorothy Fields was the daughter of a very wealthy theatrical family in New York. And at that time, she was teaching school. And her family was extremely opposed to her being involved in the theater or writing songs or having anything to do with any of that. And somehow the two of them sort of helped each other in a way. I think that Dorothy told my grandfather, you know, even though you're a poor boy from Boston, you can do this. And I think my grandfather told Dorothy Fields, even though your family's telling you you can't do this and you shouldn't do this, you're brilliant at this, and you can do this. And she gave him that strength to feel that it was okay for him to have the ambitions that he had. So they really paired very well together, the two of them.
Some of the songs they wrote together are Sunny Side of the Street, I Can't Give You Anything But Love, I'm in the Mood for Love, and Don't Blame Me.
Exactly Like You, I Can't Believe That You're in Love with Me, just many, many, many tunes, yeah.
My guest is Jim McHugh III, the grandson of composer Jimmy McHugh. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Jim McHugh III, the grandson of composer Jimmy McHugh, whose songs include On the Sunny Side of the Street, I'm in the Mood for Love, I Can't Give You Anything But Love, and Don't Blame Me. Did your grandfather Jimmy McHugh ever talk to you about his songwriting process?
I think my grandfather believed a lot in, he was a very religious man. He believed that his songs were spiritual gifts, I suppose you would say today. He was a very devout Catholic. He often kept by the side of his bed a pen and paper, and he felt that he would work on songs and he would go to sleep, and then in the middle of the night the songs would be delivered to him. And he would write down what the song was. And there's actually a very interesting story. He and Harold Adamson were working on a movie, Frank Sinatra's first movie called Higher and Higher. And they had worked and worked and worked on this song, and they just couldn't get it. And my grandfather went to bed, and in the middle of the night, he woke up. He had the melody. And he reached for his pen, and he reached for his pad, and the pad wasn't there. And so he wrote this song on a bed sheet, and went to sleep and woke up in the morning, and he called Harold Adamson. They had a big meeting at the studio, and he said, I've got it, let's go. And they ran over to the head of the studio, and they got in his office and sat down at this piano, and my grandfather couldn't remember a word or a note, couldn't remember anything. So he panicked, and he called the housekeeper at the house, and he said, get that sheet that I wrote the song on and get it over to me. And she said, well, it's too late. It's already gone to the laundry. So the head of the studio sent his driver in full livery with boots and a cap and this huge Packard car over to the laundry, and they got this sheet and brought it back to the studio, and they put it over the piano, and Jimmy McHugh sat down and played I Couldn't Sleep a Wink Last Night, which was a huge hit for Frank Sinatra in his first movie, Higher and Higher.
What a great story.
Isn't that? I mean, it's wild. I mean, it's wild, and I know that's true. My grandfather told it to me many times. But I think in terms of how he wrote songs, he just wrote songs. He got up in the morning thinking about it. He went to bed at night thinking about it. He plugged them. He wrote them. He hummed them. He got other people to do that. He was one of those extraordinary kinds of personalities, like many great artists, that they just are that way. That their life is about that. He wasn't a particularly self-reflecting person. I don't think he gave much thought to how he did things or why he did things. It was a different time too.
And you said that your grandfather told you the story behind I Couldn't Sleep a Wink Last Night many times. What was it like when you got to like the third time of hearing the story? Would you say, yeah, you told me that story already?
Well, no, you never said you told me that story one more time. We would go over, and he had this big house in Beverly Hills and in the big living room and piano. And he had his chair, and you would sit, and then he would tell you the stories with his bourbon. He always had a highball, and he was always dressed, always in slacks, always in a tie. And like your radio show, he would say, well, let me just, play you I Couldn't Sleep a Wink Last Night. And he would go over and play a few bars, and then he would come back, and that was his life. And then if you left the room and somebody else came in the room, then you would get the I Couldn't Sleep a Wink Last Night story. So he was fascinated by his own story, let's say. It was funny.
Did that get tiresome for you?
Well, it may be a little tiresome, but not really. And then he'd always give me $5 at the end of the day. So I knew if I hung out, I'd get the $5,
That's really funny. Because your grandfather was so absorbed in his songs and in his stories about his songs and in promoting himself in his songs, did he tell you before he died what kind of funeral he wanted, what he wanted played, what he wanted on his tombstone?
I think that if you went big, you knew you were safe. So go big. So I remember his funeral. It was huge. And I think he would have been very happy with that. I believe, when he died, I was devastated, and I can't remember much of that day except that it was a huge funeral. But I remember I just sobbed at the graveside. We were very, very, very close, but I knew that that's what he wanted. I knew that he wanted this big send off, and Frank Sinatra was there, and Dean Martin was there, and just Jack Benny was there. Just everybody was there. Ella Fitzgerald was there. It was an extraordinary day in Beverly Hills.
So tell me, when you were a kid, did you know Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin? Did you ever hang out with them through your grandfather?
I did. We used to, in fact, I knew Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin very well. And we would, after church on Sunday, we would go to the Beverly Hills Hotel, and then we would go over to their houses, and we would sit, and my grandfather would play the piano, and they would sing songs, and it was amazing. But at that time, you don't think of it that way. You just think, well, this is life. This is what you do after church. But later on, I realized that was quite a bird's eye view. Yeah.
Were Sinatra and Martin nice to you as a kid when they were?
Absolutely. I really nice. Frank Sinatra was very funny and very kind and always play with kids. And Dean Martin was absolutely hilarious. He was great and always, oh, don't you want to go swimming, or here, have something to eat, or here. Really, I just remember those occasions as very warm.
Jim McHugh III is a photographer for People magazine. He's the grandson of songwriter Jimmy McHugh.